This video presentation reviews the major historical events of the life of Imam Hassan alayhi salam and gives an overview of the complicated political environment in which he lived that led him to accept the treaty with Muawiyah. Imam Hassan was born on the 15th of the holy month of Ramadan in the 3rd year of Hijri in Medina. He was the firstborn of Imam Ali alayhi salam and Lady Fatima. He was also the first grandchild of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. After his birth, Angel Gabriel revealed to the Prophet and said, "O Prophet, Ali is to you like Harun was to Musa. Thus, name this child the name of Harun's son
Shubba,
which in Arabic is translated to Hassan." The Holy Prophet performed some rituals for the newborn, such as saying the Adhan in the newborn's ear, making a sacrifice and distributing its meat to the needy, shaving the baby's head, and giving silver as charity, equivalent to the weight of the baby's hair. The Holy Prophet had a special place in his heart for both of his grandsons, Imam Hassan and Hussein, who are a part of his household and are purified according to the verse of Tathir. The Prophet encouraged all of the believers to love and respect his household, as the verse from the Holy Quran states, "I do not ask you for any reward except love for my kin." The Prophet had said that Imam Hassan and Hussein are the leaders of the youth of paradise and are imams, despite the fact that they are sitting or standing, implying whether they are observing silence or are engaged in war with the injustice. There are incidents where the Prophet treated Imam Hassan and Hussein as adults, honoring them with a special social status despite their very young age. An example of this is when the Prophet accepted them as witnesses for the treaty with the tribe of Saqif and accepted their allegiance in the allegiance of Rizwan. This was a privilege that no child had ever shared in the history of the Prophet. The Christians of Najran refused to accept Islam after discussing Christian beliefs with the Holy Prophet, but were willing to do mubahila, or the cursing of the untruthful. To their surprise, the Holy Prophet did not bring an army or his companions. Instead, he brought his family, Imam Ali, Lady Fatima, Imam Hassan, and Imam Hussein. After seeing them, the Christians got discouraged and refrained from doing mubahila. That was when the verse of mubahila was revealed, calling Imam Hassan and Hussein as the sons of the Holy Prophet.
هاتان اليدان اللتان أراهما إن رفعتا بالدعاء فإنهما تزحزحان الجبال.
بلعنة هؤلاء لن يبقى لنجران أثر ولا لأهل نجران. أسرع يا عاقب، أسرع ولا تدعه يلعننا وبئس العاقبة. أطلب منه ألا يلعننا، أطلب منه ألا يلعننا.
مهلا توقف يا محمد، لا تلعننا، لا تلعننا.
Imam Hassan was 7 years old when the Prophet passed away and was present at his bedside in his last moments. Lady Fatima, the only daughter of the Holy Prophet, was martyred within a few months after the demise of the Holy Prophet. The attack on her house, in an attempt to forcefully gain allegiance from Imam Ali for the first caliph, left Lady Fatima severely injured, and even caused the miscarriage of her baby. Eventually, she died from her wounds. Imam Hassan and Hussein witnessed this injustice. They were also present with their father when he secretly buried her in the night. After the Prophet's demise, the first caliph was speaking from the Prophet's pulpit. Imam Hassan, as young as he was, entered the mosque and strongly said to him, "Come down from my father's pulpit." To which he replied, "Truly this pulpit belongs to your father as opposed to my father." When the second caliph was on his deathbed, he appointed a council of 6 people to select the next caliph. He also chose a few others, including Imam Hassan, as witnesses to the council. This shows Imam Hassan's social status and respect as the progeny of the Prophet among the society and politicians. Abu Dharr, a companion of the Prophet, criticized the unjust and corrupt government of the third caliph. The caliph thus exiled him to the desert and ordered that no one accompany him. Some, however, including Imam Ali, his brother Aqil, Imam Hassan and Hussein, and Ammar, went to bid him farewell. Imam Hassan expressed his sympathy and provided him with comforting words of patience and perseverance, giving the glad tidings of meeting the Prophet in Paradise, who would be very pleased with him. When the Caliph's house was surrounded by people objecting to his unjust government, Imam Ali sent a group of Bani Hashim, including his sons Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, to protect him. Imam Hassan always accompanied his father during his caliphate and was his right hand. He was a brave and courageous warrior and took part in the battles of Jamal, Siffin, and Nahrawan. He also possessed a great wisdom and delivered speeches to advise the people on many occasions. The people witnessed his wisdom and leadership skills. Before the Battle of Jamal, Abu Musa Ash'ari was an obstacle for the people to recognize the truth and join the Imam's army. Imam Hassan delivered a message from his father in Kufa and gave a powerful speech to destroy Abu Musa's propaganda and succeeded in recruiting around 10,000 soldiers, which formed a great portion of the Imam's army. During the battle, the camel of Aisha was a symbol for the continuation of the war. Imam Ali sent Imam Hassan to bring down the camel of Aisha from the midst of the enemy's army. Imam Hassan brought down the camel and ended the war. Imam Ali then won the battle and respectfully returned Aisha to her home. Muawiyah refused to submit the governorship of Sham to Imam Ali, which he had from the time of the second caliph. He falsely accused Imam Ali for the murder of the third caliph and prepared an army to avenge his death. He then came to the Battle of Siffin against Imam Ali, which lasted for more than 3 months and resulted in around 70,000 casualties. During the battle, Imam Hassan and Hussein were fighting so courageously that Imam Ali called them back from the battle so that the progeny of the Prophet would be saved. On the other side, seeing Imam Hassan's courage, Muawiyah tried to influence him and offered him governorship, which was clearly rejected by the Imam. At the last stage of the battle, close to Imam's victory, Muawiyah ordered his troops to hoist the Qur'ans on their spears, saying that the Qur'an should settle the battle. Imam Ali's troops were fooled and refused to continue fighting and threatened Imam Ali if he didn't accept the negotiation. They also forcefully selected Abu Musa Ash'ari as their representative. When Muawiyah's representative, Amr As, deceived Abu Musa Ash'ari in the negotiation, Imam Ali asked Imam Hassan to deliver a sermon for the unity of his army. The long and severe battle of Siffin was left inconclusive, and Imam Ali constantly urged the people to rise against the injustice of Muawiyah. The people, however, were reluctant to respond to the Imam's call. During this time, there was an uprising of the Khawarij. The Imam had no choice but to suppress the Khawarij, who were based close to Kufa. After the Battle of Nahrawan, Imam wanted to take the army directly towards Muawiyah, but the troops did not support the Imam and urged him to return to Kufa. During the upcoming months, Muawiyah and his army took benefit of this situation and invaded Egypt. They killed the Imam's governor and troops and appointed Amr As as the governor. They also made unrest in the Imam's territory in Iraq, Mecca, Medina, and Yemen. Imam was very disappointed with the people of Kufa and complained about them in many incidences. According to one of the Imam's sermon in Nahj al-Balagha, Imam wished to have just 1,000 courageous and loyal men on horses ready for battle instead of his entire army. Three of the Khawarij took an oath near the wall of the Holy Kaaba to kill Umar As, Muawiyah, and Imam Ali. Only one of them completed this heinous crime and struck Imam Ali with a poisonous sword while the Imam was leading the morning prayer in the Masjid of Kufa. Before the Imam's martyrdom, he appointed Imam Hassan to take care of his personal affairs and introduced him as the next Imam of the Muslims. Imam Hassan and Hussein and a few others buried Imam Ali secretly at night from the fear of revenge and insult of his enemies. The progeny of the Prophet had to face such atrocities where Imam Hassan witnessed both his mother and father being buried at night. After Imam Ali's martyrdom, Imam Hassan performed the qisas, or punishment, of his father's killer. After Imam Ali's martyrdom, Imam Hassan delivered a sermon in the Masjid of Kufa to announce the martyrdom of his father from the strike of a poisonous sword. In his sermon, he remembered and mourned Imam Ali. He then introduced himself as the progeny of the Prophet and described the greatness of the household of the Prophet near Allah. The people, who were already grieved by the loss of their leader and had the fear of Muawiyah's revenge for the Battle of Siffin, readily pledged allegiance to Imam Hassan. The Khawarij also pledged allegiance with the condition of war against Muawiyah. But the Imam only accepted unconditional allegiance and they agreed with no choice. After Imam Hassan was selected democratically, messengers were sent out to other parts of the government and they all paid allegiance to the Imam. When Imam Hassan became the leader, he needed some time to settle the matters of the new government. Similar to the custom of the Prophet and Imam Ali, Imam Hassan advised his opponent Muawiyah by sending him a messenger and inviting him to pledge allegiance. Muawiyah saw himself as closer to becoming the caliph after the martyrdom of Imam Ali, and he responded by saying, "Our example is like of Abu Bakr and your father Ali for the caliphate. I am older than you, and I have more experience in politics." Muawiyah continued to make problems and create propaganda against Imam Hassan. He ordered his agents in Kufa to kill the Imam and blame the Khawarij for making the turmoil. An archer attempted to kill the Imam while he was leading the prayer in the Masjid of Kufa, but failed by giving a minor injury to the Imam's neck.
سپاهیان حسن ابن علی مقاومت میکنی خانه‌اش آتش بزنید بلایی به روزگارتان میآورم.
Muawiyah sent his troops wearing the uniform of the Imam's army to attack villages and cause unrest so that the people would doubt the Imam.
تنها را ببرید.
Muawiyah also tried to deceive and bribe the tribal leaders who had pledged allegiance to the Imam and offered them wealth so that they would change sides, or at least remain isolated in the case of war. Finally, Muawiyah gathered an army of around 60,000 men by joining the Egyptian forces under the leadership of Amr As. After a short period, Muawiyah sent a message to the Imam and promised him governorship and wealth if he were to surrender. By the Imam's refusal, Muawiyah, who was well prepared for war, advanced his army towards Kufa. The Imam called the people of Kufa to the masjid and gave a sermon to notify them of Muawiyah's invasion. He asked for immediate army recruitment. After the Imam's sermon, no one from the audience responded. A few of the Imam's companions, such as Qais ibn Sa'd and Uday ibn Hatim, couldn't tolerate the people's silence and delivered a roaring speech and encouraged the people to accept the call of the Imam. It was then that the people started joining the army and the Imam was able to gather around 40,000 men. The Imam first sent 4,000 troops under the command of Hakam al-Kindi to stop the progression of Muawiyah's army.
Muawiyah, however, bribed him with gold and a promise of leadership. Hakam joined Muawiyah with 200 of his men. The Imam then sent 12,000 warriors under the command of Ibn Abbas towards the war frontier. He appointed Qais ibn Sa'ad and Sa'id ibn Qais as the successors of Ibn Abbas and ordered him to consult with them prior to making any decision. After a short time, the Imam followed the troops and came to Mada'in with his army to recruit more troops.
Muawiyah wanted to overcome the Imam at the least expense. To deceive the people, he introduced himself as a peaceful leader and spoke about Muslim unity. He blamed the Imam as a supporter of the war. At the same time, his spies propagated unrest in the army of the Imam. They spread rumors that the Imam's army at the other location had already accepted peace with Muawiyah. These rumors had an effect on Ibn Abbas, the army leader, and he joined Muawiyah at night. This move caused a great division in the army, and 8,000 of the Imam's troops also joined Muawiyah. Muawiyah then sent some negotiators to the Imam's base, and when they returned, he had them speak positively about the Imam's character and pretend that the Imam was looking to make peace with Muawiyah. This caused great confusion among the people who wanted war with Muawiyah, including the Khawarij. They then invaded the Imam's tent and stole everything. One of the Khawarij attacked the Imam with a dagger and cut his thigh so deeply that it reached his bone. This chain of events led to turmoil within the army of the Imam, and the people were no longer united. They started leaving the Imam's army and joined Muawiyah group by group. Muawiyah did not want to have the shame of killing Imam Hassan, because he was the closest blood relative alive of the Prophet and was elected to be caliph democratically by the people. So he sent a negotiator to the Imam, carrying betrayal letters of tribal leaders and influential families of Kufa, who had promised Muawiyah that if he had come to them, then they would submit the Imam to him. The negotiator brought an offer for a peace treaty with any conditions requested by the Imam. While the Imam was deeply injured, he delivered a speech to his army to complete his responsibility. He announced that Muawiyah had offered a peace treaty. He said to them, "If you want God to be pleased with you, then you must fight Muawiyah. But if you want the life of this world, then accept Muawiyah's treaty." The troops responded by saying they wanted this world. Thus, the Imam accepted the peace treaty with certain conditions. Although the conditions of the peace treaty vary in historical accounts, the main conditions put forth by the Imam are as follows. 1. Muawiyah must follow the Holy Quran, the customs of the Prophet, and the righteous caliphs. 2. Muawiyah should not appoint any successor after him. 3. Muawiyah must provide security for all of the people, including the lovers and followers of Imam Ali and Imam Hassan, and he must provide safety and protection for the life, wealth, and family of the followers of Imam Ali and Imam Hassan. And 4. Muawiyah must stop cursing Imam Ali from the pulpit. With the acceptance of the treaty, the Imam's caliphate ended in less than 7 months. After the treaty was made, the Imam sent a letter to Qais ibn Sa'd, who was still courageously resisting Muawiyah with around 4,000 of his troops, to return back. The troops of Imam and Muawiyah came to Kufa, and the treaty was officially announced. Muawiyah gave a triumphant speech in which he said, "The peace treaty lies under my foot," and threatened the people to pay allegiance within 3 days. Muawiyah then returned to Sham and had to pay a large bribe to the Eastern Roman Empire that was planning to invade Sham by taking benefit of the civil war between the Muslims. After the treaty, the Imam migrated back to Medina. During his return, he received a letter from Muawiyah seeking his support against a group of Khawarij who had revolted against him. The Imam declined any support and responded by saying that if I rise for war, then you are my first opposition. Although the Imam was forced by the circumstances to accept a treaty with Muawiyah, the Cold War between them continued. On some occasions, The Imam confronted Muawiyah, who was insulting Imam Ali and Imam Hassan in his speeches. Many times the Imam was confronted and even blamed by his own Shia followers for accepting the treaty with Muawiyah. The Imam expressed that there was a lack of loyal followers to support him against Muawiyah, which left him with no choice but to accept the treaty. He told some that he did what Prophet Khizr had done to the boat by making a hole in it, and Prophet Musa could not understand the wisdom behind it until later. In another instance, he said that the treaty had saved the lives of many of the Shia from vanishing. During the Imam's life in Medina, the Imam was leading the Shias and used all opportunities to guide and lead the people. The Imam was a symbol of piety in the society. He performed Hajj 25 times on barefoot throughout his lifetime. He was so generous that on multiple occasions, he donated all or half his entire wealth in the way of Allah. After years of Muawiyah being in power, he decided to take allegiance for his son Yazid as his successor, but saw the Imam as a barrier by the conditions of the treaty. He did not want to directly kill the Imam, so he deceived one of the Imam's wives, Jawda, with the promise of wealth and marriage to Yazid. Jawda, with the encouragement of her father who was in support of Muawiyah, poisoned the Imam. When the Imam was poisoned, he told Imam Hussein that they had given him poison before as well, but that this time it was fatal. In his will, the Imam requested to be buried by his grandfather, the Holy Prophet, and that if the burial near the Prophet was not possible, he wanted to get buried by his grandmother, Fatima bint Asad, in Jannatul Baqi Cemetery, as he did not want a single drop of blood to be spilled in his burial. Crowds of Muslims came for Imam Hassan's burial. They took his body towards the tomb of the Prophet, but were stopped by the troops of Marwan ibn Hakim. Aisha also came in opposition. There was a conflict between the crowd and the troops, which led the Imam's body to be hit with many arrows. Imam Hussein then directed the crowd towards Jannatul Baqi by reminding them of Imam Hassan's will to not have any blood spilt on his burial. Later, Muawiyah became delighted when he found out about Marwan ibn Hakam's action and reappointed him as governor of Medina. Imam Hassan lived during a very complicated political environment that forced him to give up the caliphate and accept a treaty with Muawiyah. It is very surprising to see that even the historical records differ in the content of the treaty to degrade its significance. However, there was wisdom behind the treaty. The treaty saved the Muslim nation as a whole against the threats of the Eastern Roman Empire by avoiding a civil war. It also saved the few thousand loyal Shias from vanishing and helped their population to survive and grow. The treaty revealed Muawiyah's true face, who just wanted to reach power by portraying an Islamic outlook. With the historical evidence, Muawiyah did not follow any of the treaty's conditions during his 20 years of power after the treaty. He also appointed his son Yazid as his successor. For the first time after the Prophet, Muawiyah changed the system of Islamic government from the caliphate to a monarchy, which still exists till today. Truly, if the Imam was killed by Muawiyah in a war, people would say that it was a desire for power and for caliphate. However, the Imam's treaty provided grounds for Imam Hussein's rise against Yazid and justified his cause. The people of Kufa realized their mistake and sent thousands of letters of support to Imam Hussein right after Muawiyah's death. When one studies the life of Imam Hassan, the Prophet's grandson, he is overwhelmed by the oppression that this Imam had to face. The secret burials of his mother and father, the lack of loyalty from his troops, the several attacks and injuries that he suffered from his own army and Muawiyah's army, the blame from his own Shias for accepting the treaty, the poison from his traitorous wife, and even a burial in which people fired arrows at his body. This oppression continued even after his martyrdom, by many rumors which were spread to degrade the Imam, and are still continued to this day by his barren shrine.